The Truth News Network. Today's noise giving you heartburn? D-A-N. That's how you spell relief. TNN.
The Truth News Network.
Here's Dan Newman.
I got to be honest with you. I spell relief T-R-U-T-H, truth. That's what we're chasing, isn't it? And we're chasing it, and we're asking questions like this one. How deep is it, and what's at the bottom? We certainly know the names of some of those directly involved in this COVID-19 debacle. What we still haven't been able to reveal is the purpose, or the purpose says, for the noise. What result is expected, and who are the ones that are loading the gun? So far, we've identified the players, those who are firing the shots. But who's behind the gun? Let's dig deeper. It's deeper and broader than Fauci, Burks, and Gates, Bill Gates. Fauci and Burks are the obvious pawns in all this, but they're not the players. Gates, on the other hand, if you think about it, he has the desires and the capability to load the gun and fire the shots. Let's assume for just a moment that's the case. That's what's going on. Let's go back to remdesivir. You remember yesterday we revealed that cure-all drug that has now been tentatively approved for trial purposes by the FDA. Gilead, remdesivir, and the Chinese. Gilead is the company, probably the biggest drug company in the world. It's headquartered in Silicon Valley in California. And it's the company that developed remdesivir. Yesterday, we shared how that new miracle drug was developed in conjunction with Chinese doctors and the Wuhan Infectious Disease Laboratory. We also told you that the Chinese jumped all over it, had begun mass production of the drug. But how does that play into the patent rights of the drug? Remember, the Chinese are involved in it, and their big thing? Stealing intellectual property, like patents. Are we headed back to a similar situation we found ourselves in last month? Remember, regarding that N95 3M mask? Those are manufactured at a 3M plant, but in China? You remember that case? China placed millions of mask orders 45 days before the rest of the world even knew anything about coronavirus. That order with 3M meant that the U.S. had to look elsewhere for masks, as did every other country. China, in essence, cornered the market by pressuring 3M to put their country in front of all other countries for N95 masks. That left us out in the cold, even though 3M is a U.S. corporation. So here's how the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, is handling the Gilead remdesivir patent rights. Now, you're going to have to listen close all the way through this today, folks, because it's very detailed, but it's very important. In fact, it's critical that you get this. A company named Bright Gene Biomedical Technology, it's a Chinese-based company, just announced that it has developed the technology to synthesize the active pharmaceutical ingredients of remdesivir. While Bright Gene said that it intends to license the drug from Gilead, its move to start manufacturing at this early stage is a highly unusual and potential infringement of the American company's intellectual property. There you go. This comes a week after Chinese researchers at the Wuhan Institute of Virology applied for a patent for Gilead's drug remdesivir to treat the new coronavirus. Now, why would that lab be filing for a patent of a U.S. company's product? This bid would give China leverage over the global use of the therapy to fight the outbreak. The decision to seek a patent instead of invoking a compulsory license option, and what that is, it lets nations override drug patents in national emergencies, that signals China's commitment toward intellectual property rights. The timing of this is simply uncanny, folks. Gilead's going to retain the global rights to market the antiviral medication once it's approved. And of course, Gilead is critical to China in this because there's no way the FDA would approve this and accept this drug unless an American company was involved in it, Gilead. Gilead has also announced it's partnered with the Chinese health authorities on the clinical trials of remdesivir as a treatment for coronavirus. Those tests are those that are underway today at Tony Fauci's laboratory. That laboratory owned by U.S. taxpayers. Remdesivir was developed initially in 2016 by Gilead as a treatment for the Ebola virus under the auspices of Anthony Fauci. Many have argued that China stole the patent from Gilead due to a technicality. So, who is this company, Gilead? Well, Gilead, as we told you, is a Silicon Valley company. It's a publicly traded company, but it's an American company. And it's now partnered with WuXi, that's W-X-I, WuXi or WuXi, let's call it WuXi. Gilead is partnered with WuXi Pharmaceuticals, which is owned by a philanthropist and mass manipulator himself. And guess who that is? The principal stockholder, George Soros. WuXi Pharmaceuticals is conveniently located in the epicenter of the outbreak near Wuhan Institute of Virology that has been identified as the bioweapons manufacturer of this coronavirus, if it really is a bioweapon. If so, it looks like China has both the bioweapon and the cure now. And let's not forget the patent on the treatment drug. How charitable do you suppose China's going to be with us over here, you know, the West? But this story doesn't end here. George Soros also owns Gilead Biosciences, and the plot thickens. Doctors at Providence Regional Medical Center successfully treated a coronavirus patient within hours using Gilead's drug remdesivir. Given the current outbreak that's taken the world by surprise, it's essential to look at all the current players. How is Gilead Biosciences tied to this viral outbreak? Well, Gilead endorsed and is involved in a drug purchasing group called Unitaid, U-N-I-T-A-I-D, whose mandate is to create a patent pool for pharmaceutical companies to share their drug patents with other companies to produce generic drugs for the distribution to poor African nations. Great cause. Good cause. No question about it. The royalties from the sales of these generic drugs are then paid to the patent holders, and they only get a pittance from that pool rather than the retail price they sell to everyone else. Unitaid emerged from the United Nations 2000 Millennium Declaration, which has now evolved into the UN Global Compact. Their internet timeline shows that the Unitaid website, unitaid.org, is also linked to refunite.org, an agency partnered with the UN Refugee Agency that helps to connect refugees with their families using the internet. Unitaid has several financial backers, including the WHO, UNAIDS Global Fund, and the Rollback Malaria Partnership. Also, Unitaid has corporate sponsorship from pharmaceuticals with the medicine's patent pool. One billionaire investor behind Unitaid, as we said, is George Soros himself. But why stop there? Unitaid is also financed by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and you're not going to believe this. It also involves a partnership with the Clinton Health Access Initiative. And interestingly enough, both Unitaid and Gilead Biosciences supported Hillary for president in 2016. Don't forget, George Soros gave at least $25 million to Hillary's campaign. Unitaid's objective are to exclude high and middle-income countries from drug pool while allowing developing countries to benefit from lower drug prices. Again, a worthy cause. In 2009, Unitaid's board voted to exclude China and other more lucrative nations when considering targeted states outside of Africa. However, since then, all that has changed, and Unitaid has now included China in its drug pool. So let's pull all of this together, at least what we have so far. A year later, we now have a global pandemic emerging from mainland China. And the Chinese are the holders of the patent for the treatment drug, and they are also included in the United Nations Unitaid initiative that will let them benefit from lower drug pricing. How about that? Furthermore, Gilead, a prominent supporter of Unitaid, has also announced that it is partnering with the Chinese health authorities on the clinical trials of remdesivir as a treatment for coronavirus. Once approved formally, Gilead will retain the global rights to market the antiviral medication. Can you imagine a scenario where every other drug that is lab-proven to effectively tackle COVID-19 is determined by the FDA to be ineligible for its uses for any of a multitude of reasons? Can you picture something like that happening? What would happen then if remdesivir is the only FDA-approved drug to use against coronavirus? I got to be honest with you, I can see that happening. Though Gilead holds the unilateral marketing rights of remdesivir, the Chinese control the patent. Can anyone say blackmail? Let's move on. Next, attack on Americans' constitutional rights. Are stay-at-home decrees constitutional? A legislative body, state or federal, can pass any law it decides to, and a governor or president enacts it by signing it, or it's enacted by the legislature overriding a governor or the president's veto. But once it's passed, a law could only be deemed unconstitutional or illegal or improper by judges, not by cops, nor by the opinions of individuals in society. Once we accept that, we can examine the constitutionality or legality of stay-at-home orders. We should discuss whether such orders conform to the U.S. Constitution. Still, because such emergency orders fall under the authority of state police powers, they're generally governed by state constitutions and state laws. And of course, they're different from every state. State police powers, or a state's capacity to regulate behavior and enforce order within its territory for the, quote, betterment of the health, safety, morals, and general welfare of its inhabitants. States have the power to compel obedience to their laws through whatever measures they see fit, whatever's necessary, provided that those measures don't infringe upon any of the rights protected by the Constitution or their own state constitutions and are not unreasonably arbitrary or oppressive. Now, how do you think they come up with what's unreasonable? That's an opinion, folks. Some have commented on social media saying, liberty is unconditional, and the government can't strip you of your rights, period. Now, those are generally correct statements in a philosophical sense. Still, it's got to be mentioned, there's a big difference between stripped or taken away and restricted or curtailed for some time. We're all aware, or at least we should be, that the federal and all state constitutions allow for imprisonment or the confiscation of a property when a person violates certain laws. So liberty is very much conditional, and the government can restrict your rights based on those laws. For violations of the very worst crimes, the government can even permanently take away your rights by ending your existence, as in capital punishment. Each state in its constitution details the conditions that can rise to the necessary need for its governor to declare an emergency and to take whatever actions are essential, in his opinion, to protect the state, its assets, and its people from the particular results that will or might impact both the state and its citizens. Each state has created legislatively the specific circumstances that justify and initiate such a declaration. It also created the exact terms and conditions under which the state itself and its officials, along with the state's residents, must adhere to and are regulated by these terms during the dates applicable under the declaration. In other words, that's all the legalese language that I just gave you. They got to do what has been approved by the state, signed by the government. Everybody's got to work together to make it happen. Like social distancing. What about the law being an affront to the U.S. Constitution? For the same reasons as laid out regarding its constitutionality under the state constitution, it's not an easy answer, and there are very few precedents that any court can point to. No precedents exist for cases exactly like this. And as we look ahead, and we can just imagine lawsuits being filed in federal court for violation of civil rights, The fact that that gray area is there and there aren't any precedents that any court can point to, it's probably going to create some problems for some citizens. You watch. What we do know is that the Supreme Court has generally been pretty lenient on what would usually be seen as infringements of rights during emergencies, so long as the measures taken aren't arbitrary or capricious, again, an opinion. In other words, for something like this, and given the seriousness of our situation, the Supreme Court will likely allow it so long as the governor can provide a good reason and show that what he did was not meant to punish or harm anybody, but rather to protect society from an imminent threat. And this one we call COVID-19. It helps if a governor can show that the best experts agree that what he ordered done would be likely to work. And with COVID-19, the best experts around the world, including right here in the U.S., are recommending precisely what U.S. governors are doing. Some are even recommending more drastic measures. So, are stay-at-home orders constitutional? Are they legal or not? The short and likely correct answer is probably. Maybe not, but they very likely are. What we can know for sure is that law enforcement is doing their duty and following their oath to enforce a duly passed law, a law likely few want to enforce. At the same time, they're trying to protect everybody, protect our health. So if they tell you to go home unless you want to fight in court where you're almost certainly going to lose, or best case scenario, you're going to spend a lot of money, how about doing everybody a favor and just saying, yes, officer, I'm going to go home? But you know what? There's a caveat. There's a but hanging in the air. The answer to the constitutionality of the declarations is probably not quite so crystal clear. There are U.S. laws that weigh into the determination by a court if a specific declaration passes constitutional muster. As an example, the declaration in Georgia is quite different from the declaration in Louisiana. Both states' governors made those declarations. And so to determine constitutionality and potential violation of an individual or a group of individual citizens' constitutional rights, it's going to be tough in court. Title 18 U.S.C. Section 242. Listen closely. Deprivation of rights under color of law. Whoever, under color of any law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom, willfully subjects any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured or protected by the Constitution or laws of the United States, or to different punishments, pains, or penalties, an account of such person being an alien, or by reason of his color or race, than are prescribed for the punishment of citizens, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year, or both. And if bodily injury results from the acts committed in violation of this section, or if such acts include the use, attempted use, or threatened use of a dangerous weapon, explosives, or fire, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 10 years, or both. And if death results from the acts committed in violation of this section, or if such acts include kidnapping or an attempt to kidnap, aggravated sexual abuse, or an attempt to commit aggravated sexual abuse, or any attempt to kill, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for any term of years for life, or both, or may be sentenced to death. So, here's the obvious question. What is color of law? Color of law refers to an act done under the appearance of legal authorization. Like, yeah, we got a law. We know it's legal. When in fact, no such right existed at all. It applies when a person is acting under real or apparent government authority. The term is used in the Federal Civil Rights Act, which gives citizens the right to sue government officials and their agents who use their power to violate rights guaranteed by federal law. And of course, the basic template of all federal laws is the U.S. Constitution. Could it be that any action by any person or institution that, though legal according to state laws, violates 18 U.S.C. Section 242, the color of law? Well, when we have questions about the Constitution or American law, who better to go to for an opinion than whoever the attorney general is at the time. So what does our attorney general, William Barr, have to say about these various states' actions forcing Americans to stay in place under a myriad of terms and conditions? And it's a good thing for us. AG Barr has weighed in on that very thing. Comparing nationwide lockdown orders to house arrest, Attorney General Barr has suggested the Department of Justice could take legal action against states and governors to end social restrictions designed to slow the spread of coronavirus. He stated this, quote, "As lawsuits develop, as specific cases emerge in the states, we'll take a look at them." He continued, "These are unprecedented burdens on civil liberties right now. You know the idea that you have to stay in your house is disturbingly close to house arrest. I'm not saying it wasn't justified. I'm not saying in some places it might still be justified. But it's very difficult, as is shutting down your livelihood." Barr likened continuing shutdown orders to a case of a doctor who keeps feeding the patient chemotherapy during cancer treatment. The cancer might be killed, but so would the patient, he rationalized. This is another way of saying, and you've heard President Trump say it over and over again, the cure is worse than the disease. In summary, folks, it's going to get ugly, and you say it's already ugly. Well, then it's going to get uglier. You can bet that lawsuits are being readied as we share these thoughts in state and federal lawsuits. And you can bet one more thing. One or several of these cases will show up on the docket of the Supreme Court at some point. I can't imagine a scenario in which Americans find themselves living in a strategy, not of their own choosing, but thrust upon them by arbitrary and nonspecific declarations of emergencies made by governors. You can bet some of these governors have made these declarations of emergencies from a political perspective, but have done it in the name of protecting states' citizens. We all know how this could end. We all know how we could make it stop before any of the litigation gets underway and paralyzes the U.S. justice system. Open the nation for business, ladies and gentlemen. Put us back to work. Is that going to happen? You know what? I think it will. But unfortunately, I think it'll happen not as a product of the consideration of the constitutional rights guaranteed in the Constitution. It'll happen purely for dollars and cents. Capitalism. There's that evil thing again. It could pull us out of this. It could, on its own, stop this lock-in that we're experiencing. Within the economic structure and current conditions of the nation, every entity and every individual has been forced to adopt what for many is an alternative view from their normal. Everyone, if not now, then soon, will be on the same page on this. We must get the nation reopened economically. Americans have the right to work, a right that has been stripped away, even though just briefly, we hope. And without work, there is no available income for anyone, including the government, state and federal. It would be wonderful if anything in our nation that confronts us in any sector of life would function through a month or two without forcing Americans into a shouting match. Apparently, that's not possible for the month of May. Let's hope we can find some answers that we can initiate, maybe this month, maybe in May, but certainly no later than June. If we can make that happen, if we can accomplish that, most of us will try hard to just let it go and forget about the emotional and economic hardships and upheaval these declarations have cost us all. It would be wonderful to have only one thought to be concerned about in the evening when everyone finally shows up at the house. Do we want vanilla or chocolate ice cream for dinner? With or without nuts and Ready Whip? Wouldn't you just love for that to be the greatest conflict of determination you or any member of your family have tomorrow night when everybody gets home? And I know everybody will be wearing masks and we'll be social distancing around the house. Hey, thank you for joining us here today. Something new every day, isn't it? Something different every day. I like diversity, but I don't like the fact that we still have all of this uncertainty, all of this hanging over our heads with no real answers. Give us the truth, somebody. Give us the facts and let us make determinations of what's best for us, what's best for our families, and therefore, what's best for the United States of America. God bless our leaders. God help our members of Congress. Give them wisdom. And we pray for protection and covering over all of our federal elected officials, and especially President Trump and his family. Until 9 o'clock this morning, folks, 9 o'clock, TNN Live is right here, 9 to 11 Central. Join us, won't you? Up in the right side of the homepage of the website, there's a blue horizontal banner that says Listen Live. Click here. Join us. You can call in and talk to us, ask questions, and give us your opinions. We had over 400,000 people join us yesterday. Be one of those today. We'll see you then. If not, we'll see you tomorrow morning at Truth News Network, truthnewsnet.org.
From McAllen, Texas to Berlin, Germany, the universal language is truth on TNN,
the Truth News Network.